This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this archive edition, we have a 1997 interview with Johnny Cash. He's done little performing since then because of health problems. According to his business office, he has diabetic autonomic neuropathy, which damages nerve tissues. But Cash is back in the studio making a new CD. And this week, his classic recording, Live from San Quentin, was reissued. Here he is in San Quentin prison in 1969.
And I was thinking about you guys yesterday. Well, I'd been here three times before, and I think I understand a little bit how you feel about some things. It's none of my business how you feel about some other things, and I don't give a damn how you feel about some other things. But anyway, I tried to put myself in your place, and I believe this is the way that I would feel about San Quentin. San Quentin, you've been living hell to me. You blistered me since 1963. I've seen them come and go and I've seen them die. And long ago I stopped asking why. San Quentin, I hate every inch of you. You cut me and you scarred me through and through. And I'll walk out a wiser, weaker man. Mr. Congressman, you can't understand.
Johnny Cash is in the Country Music Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. His biggest hits include I Walk the Line, Jackson, Ring of Fire, Ballad of Ira Hayes, and Folsom Prison Blues. As Cash said in his autobiography, between the early 70s and the early 90s, he didn't sell huge numbers of records, but he kept making music he's proud of. But then he hooked up with record producer Rick Rubin, who had produced many rap and rock hits. As the autobiography says, the Cash and Rubin collaborations transformed Cash's image from Nashville has-been to hip icon. Let's hear a song from his first recording with Rubin. This is Why Me, Lord, and it's included on one of three new Cash compilation CDs featuring tracks chosen by Cash himself. Each CD collects songs on a subject: love, murder, and God.
Why me, Lord? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the blessings I've known? Why me, Lord? What did I ever do that was worth love from you and the kindness you've shown? Lord, help me, Jesus, I've wasted it. So help me, Jesus, I know what I am. Now that I know that I've needed you, so help me, Jesus, my soul's in your hand. Try me, Lord, if you think there's a...
Your career has in many ways been about both the sacred and the profane. You've always been Christian and have always sung hymns. And on the other hand, there were times in your life when, as you write in your book, when you'd been in and out of jails, hospitals, car wrecks, when you were a walking vision of death, and that's exactly how you felt, you say in your new book. Have you always been aware of that contradiction, you know, of the sacred and the profane running through your life?
Yeah, Christofferson wrote a song, and in that song was a line that says, wrote the song about me. He's a walking contradiction, partly truth and partly fiction. And I've always explored various areas of society. And I love the young people. And I had an empathy for prisoners and did concerts for them. Back when I thought that it would make a difference, you know, that that they really were there to be rehabilitated.
You grew up during the Depression. What are some of the things that your father did to make a living while you were a boy?
My father was a cotton farmer first, but he didn't have any land, or what land he had, he lost it in the Depression. So he worked as in the woodsman and cut pulp wood for the paper mills. Rode the rails on in box cars, going from one harvest to another to try to make a little money picking fruit or vegetables. Did every kind of work imaginable, from painting to shoveling to herding cattle. And he's always been such an inspiration to me because of the varied kinds of things that he did and the kind of life he lived. He inspired me so that all the things he did, so far from being a soldier in World War I to being an old man in his patio sitting on the porch watching the dogs, you know, I think about his life and it would inspire me to go my own other direction.
You know, it's interesting that you say your father inspired you so much. I'm sure you wouldn't have wanted to lead his life picking cotton.
I did. Until I was 18 years old, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Then I picked the guitar and I've been picking it since.
Right. You have such a wonderful, deep voice. Did you start singing before your voice changed?
Oh, yeah. I got no deep voice today. I've got a cold. But when I was so young, I had a high tenor voice. I used to sing Bill Monroe songs, and I sing Dennis Day songs, like
sang
on songs that he sang on the Jack Benny show.
Wow!
Every week he sang an old Irish folk song, and next day in the fields I'd be singing that song if I was working in the fields, and I always loved those songs. And with my high tenor, I thought I was pretty good, you know, almost as good as Dennis Day. But when I was 16, my father and I cut wood all day long, and I was swinging that crosscut saw and hauling wood. And when I walked in the back door late that afternoon, I was singing, "Everybody gonna have religion and glory, everybody gonna be singing a story." I sang those old gospel songs for my mother, and she said, "Is that you?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she came over and put her arms around me and said, "God's got his hands on you." I still think of that, you know?
She realized you had a gift.
That's what she said, yeah. She called it the gift.
Well, how did you feel about your voice changing? It must have stunned you if you were singing like Dennis O'Day and then suddenly you were singing like Johnny Cash.
I don't know. I guess when I was a tenor, I just, and when it changed, I thought, well, it goes right along with these hormones and everything's working out really good, you know? I felt like my voice was becoming a man's voice.
Right, right. So did you start singing different songs as your voice got deeper?
Mm-hmm. Lucky Old Son, Memories Are Made of This, 16 Tons. I developed a pretty unusual style, I think. If I'm anything, I'm not a singer, but I'm a song stylist.
What's the difference?
Well, I say I'm not a singer, so that means I can't sing. But doesn't it?
Well, but I mean, that's not true. I understand you're making a distinction, but you certainly can sing. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Well, song stylist is like to take an old folk song like Delia's Gone and do a modern white man's version of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those I did that way. You know, I would take songs that I'd loved as a child and redo them in my mind for the new voice I had, the low voice.
I know that you briefly took singing lessons, and you say in your new book that your singing teacher told you, you know, don't let anybody change your voice, don't even bother with the singing lessons. How did you end up taking lessons in the first place?
My mother did that, and she was determined that I was going to leave the farm and do well in life, and she thought with the gift I might be able to do that. So she took in washing. She got a washing machine in 1942, as soon as they got electricity. And she took in washing. She washed the school teacher's clothes and anybody she could, and sent me for singing lessons for $3 per lesson. And that's how she made the money to send me.
What was your reaction when the teacher told you, don't let anybody change what you're doing? Don't, you know, I'm not going to teach you anymore.
I was pretty happy about that. I didn't really want to change, you know. I felt good about my voice.
My guest is Johnny Cash. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1997 interview with Johnny Cash. You left home when you were about 18. And then how old were you when you actually went to Memphis?
Well, I went to Memphis after I finished the Air Force in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
I lived on that farm until I went to the Air Force. I was in there four years, and when I came back, I got married and moved to Memphis. Got an apartment. Started trying to sell appliances at a place called Home Equipment Company, but I couldn't sell anything and didn't really want to. All I wanted was the music, and if somebody in the house was playing music when I would go come, I would stop and sing with them. Like one time, Gus Cannon, the man who wrote Walk Right In,
mm-hmm.
which was a hit for the Rooftop Singers, and I sat on the front porch with him day after day when I found him and sang those songs.
When you got to Memphis, Elvis Presley had already recorded That's All Right. Sam Phillips had produced him for his label Sun Records. You called Sam Phillips and asked for an audition. Did it take a lot of nerve to make that phone call?
No, it just took the right time. I was fully confident that I was going to see Sam Phillips and to record for him. That when I called him, I thought, I'm going to get on Sun Records. So I called him and he turned me down flat. Then 2 weeks later, I called, turned down again. He told me over the phone that he couldn't sell gospel music, so because it was independent, not a lot of money, you know. So I didn't press that issue, but one day I just decided I'm ready to go. So I went down with my guitar and sat on the front steps of his recording studio and met him when he came in. And I said, I'm John Cash. I'm the one that's been calling. And if you'd listen to me, I believe you'd be glad you did. And he said, come on in. Well, that was a good lesson for me, you know, to believe in myself.
What was the audition like?
It was about 3 hours of singing with just my guitar. Songs, a lot of them, like the songs that are in my first American Recordings album.
So what did Phillips actually respond to most of the songs that you played him?
He responded most to a song of mine called Hey Porter, which was on the first record. But he asked me to go write a love song or maybe a bitter weeper. So I wrote a song called Cry, 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 went back in and recorded that for the other side of the record.
You say in your book you had to do 35 takes of Cry, Cry, Cry. Why did it take so many takes?
It was too simple. We were trying to make something complicated out of it. It was the simplest song in the world ever written. And invariably, at some time during a take, the guitar player would mess up, or the bass player, or I would mess up, and we'd have to do it over. It's not unusual, though, to do a song 35 times.
Were you nervous because it was your first recording?
No, not at all. I had confidence that I was going to do it. I'd been singing in Germany in the Air Force. I'd been singing with my little group called the Landsberg Barbarians. And we played in honky-tonks and guest houses and wherever we could, you know, when we weren't working.
Well, why don't we hear Cry, 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 which was on the first single that Sun Records released by you.
Okay.
Everybody knows where you go when the sun goes down. I think you only live to see the lights uptown. I wasted my time when I would try, try, try. 'Cause when the lights have lost their glow, you'll cry, cry, cry. Soon your sugar daddies will all be gone. You wake up some cold day and find you're alone. You'll call for me, but I'm gonna tell you bye, bye, bye. When I turn around and walk away, you'll cry, cry, cry. You're gonna cry, 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 and you cry alone. When everyone's forgotten and you're left on your own, you're gonna cry, cry, cry.
That's Johnny Cash, his first single. And Johnny Cash has a new autobiography, which is called Cash, the Autobiography. So, this record was the beginning of your recording career. What was it like when you started to go on tour? You know, after coming from the cotton fields, It's true. I mean, you'd been in the Army and you'd been abroad, you know, with the Army. But what was it like for you in the early days of getting recognized, you know, traveling around the country?
Well, when I started playing concerts, I went out from Memphis to Arkansas, Louisiana, and Tennessee, played the little towns there that I would go out myself in my car and set up the show or get the show booked in those theaters. And then along about 3 months later, Elvis Presley asked me to sing with him at the Overton Park Shell in Memphis. And I sang Cry, Cry, Cry and Hey Porter. And from that time on, I was on my way, and I knew it, I felt it, and I loved it. So Elvis asked me to go on tour with him, and I did. I worked with Elvis four or five tours in the next year or so. And I was always intrigued by his charisma. You know, I just, you can't be in the building without looking at him, you know? And he inspired me so that with his fire and energy that I guess that inspiration from him really helped me to go.
It's funny. I think of your charisma and his charisma as being very different forms of charisma because, I mean, he would move around so much on stage, and I think of your charisma as being a very kind of still, stoic kind of charisma.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm an old man to him. I'm 4 years older than he was. So I was 23 when I started recording, and Elvis was 19. And I was married. He wasn't. So we didn't have a lot in common family life.
Mm-hmm.
But we liked each other and appreciated each other. So he asked me to tour with him.
Did you want that kind of adulation that he was getting from girls who would come see him?
I don't remember if I wanted it, but I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did. But I didn't. I only got it to a very small degree compared to Elvis.
Right. What were the temptations like for a young married man like yourself on the road, you know, slowly becoming a star?
Fame was pretty hard to handle, actually. The country boy in me tried to break loose and take me back to the country, but the music was stronger. The urge to go out and do the gift was a lot stronger. And the temptations were women, girls, which I loved, and then amphetamines, not very much later, from running all night, you know, in our cars on tour. And the doctors got these nice pills that give us energy and keep us awake. So I started taking those, and I liked them so much I got addicted to them. And then I started taking downers or sleeping pills to come down and rest after 2 or 3 days. So it became a cycle. I was taking the pills for a while, and then the pills started taking me.
I want to play what I think was your first big hit, I Walk the Line.
Mm-hmm. That was my third record.
And you wrote the song. Tell me the story of how you wrote it and what you were thinking about at the time.
In the Air Force, I had an old Wilcox K recorder and used to hear guitar runs on that recorder going dun-dun-dun-dun, like the chords on I Walk the Line. And I always wanted to write a love song using that theme, you know, that tune. And so I started to write the song, and I was in Gladewater, Texas one night with Carl Perkins, and I said, I've got a good idea for a song. And I sang him the first verse that I had written, and I said, it's called Because You're Mine. And he said, I Walk the Line is a better title. So I changed it to I Walk the Line.
Now, were you thinking of your own life when you wrote this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a prodding to myself to play it straight, Johnny.
And was this, I think I read that this was supposed to be a ballad. I mean, it was supposed to be slow when you first wrote it.
That's the way I sang it, yeah, at first. But Sam wanted it up, you know, up-tempo, and I put paper in the strings of my guitar to get that sound, and with a bass and a lead guitar, there it was, bare and stark, that song was, when it was released, and I heard it on the radio, And I really didn't like it. And I called Sam Phillips and asked him, please not send out any more records of that song.
Why?
But he laughed at me. I just didn't like the way it sounded to me. I didn't know it sounded that way. And I didn't like it. I don't know. But he said, let's give it a chance. And it was just a few days until that's all it took to take off.
That's funny. I mean, you'd heard your voice before, hadn't you?
Mm-hmm.
But so it was something in your own singing you weren't liking when you heard it?
Well, the music and my voice together, I just felt like it was really weird. But I got used to it very quickly. I don't know if that I didn't hate it, but I just didn't like it. I thought I could do better.
We'll continue our 1997 interview with Johnny Cash in the second half of the show. Let's hear I Walk the Line from his 1969 performance at San Quentin Prison. The album has just been reissued. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
So what do you want to hear? All right. All right. I Walk the Line.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our 1997 interview with Johnny Cash. He's back in the studio recording a new CD. In the meantime, he has new reissues. Three new CDs collect his songs about love, murder, and God. And there's a new reissue of his classic album, Live from San Quentin, featuring his 1969 performance at the prison. I think it was in the late 1950s that you started doing prison concerts, which you eventually became very famous for.
Mm-hmm.
What got you started performing in prison?
Well, I had a song called Folsom Prison Blues that was the hit just before I Walked the Line. And the people in Texas heard about it at the state prison and got to write me letters asking me to come down there. So I responded, and then the warden called me and asked if I would come down and do a show for the prisoners in Texas. And so we went down, and there's a rodeo at all these shows that the prisoners have there. And in between the rodeo things, they asked me to set up and do two or three songs. So that was what I did. I did Folsom Prison Blues, which they thought was their song, you know. And I Walked the Line, Hey Porter, Cry, Cry, Cry. And then the word got around on the grapevine that Johnny Cash was all right and that you ought to see him. So the requests started coming in from other prisoners all over the United States. And then the word got around. So I always wanted to record that, you know, to record a show. Because of the reaction I got, it was far and above anything I had ever had in my life. The complete explosion of noise and reaction that they gave me with every song.
What kind of reaction surprised you the most when you were performing for prisoners?
Well, what really surprised me was any kind of prison song, I could do no wrong. You know, if it's whatever, the prisoner song or San Quentin, a song of mine. But they felt like they could identify with me, I suppose. I sang songs like Dark as a Dungeon, or Bottom of a Mountain, songs about the working man and the hard life. And, of course, they'd been through the hard life, all of them, or they wouldn't be there. So they kind of related to all that, I guess, the songs I chose. Very little of love songs, very few. Mostly, you know, songs about the down and outer. And so then requests started coming in for me to go to other prisons, and it got overwhelming. So I decided I would do two or three, and I wouldn't do any more. Because one thing, my wife was scared to death, and the other women on the show were too, so I decided not to. It was still a great experience to get on stage and perform those people.
You married your second wife, your wife June Carter, now June Carter Cash, in 1968. How did you first meet the members of the Carter family, the kind of first family of country music?
I met June at the backstage at the Grand Ole Opry when I did my first appearance as a guest artist. And it was 5 years again, 5 years more till I saw her again. And we started working together, touring, beginning in Des Moines on in January 1962, and we've been together ever since. I met her family when about my second tour that we had Juno, because I asked them to all come and be a part of the show. So I kind of got into those people and became one of their family, and it felt good to go out with them.
What was it like traveling with a family instead of being on your own? Being on your own, leaving the family behind?
I really don't like to do an appearance without June Carter. And what it would be like being alone, it would be awfully lonely to me. I'm very comfortable with, you know, how we do it. My wife and my son on the show and a daughter or two. And it feels so good. I would hate to think that I had to do it all alone.
Did it change your life to have a family that really understood the performing life because it was their life too?
Very much so, yeah, right.
What was the difference? I mean, why was that so important?
Well, there's something about families singing together that is just better than any other groups you can pick up or make, you know. If it's family, if it's blood on blood, then it's going to be better. The voices singing their parts are going to be tighter, and they're going to be more on pitch because it's, as I say, it's a bloodline on bloodline. And it's always really comfortable and easy for me to sing with June or any of those girls.
Johnny Cash, recorded in 1997 after the publication of his autobiography. He's back in the studio recording a new CD. His classic prison recording, Live from San Quentin, was reissued this week. He also has three new compilation CDs of songs he chose himself. Each CD features songs on one theme, love, murder, and God. Here's a song from the Love CD.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Coming up, we remember dancer Harold Nicholas of the Nicholas Brothers. This is Fresh Air.